Danny Kenosha Mayor. Highlights of his tenure included redevelopment of major brownfield sites, reduced crime, development of three museums, two industrial parks, and updates to the city's budget and financial processes. Before he was elected mayor, he was the state representative for Kenosha's 65th Assembly District for 10 years. John earned a B.S. in Economics and Business Management from the University of Wisconsin-Parkside in 77. In 2008, he joined the Carthage College faculty and started a consulting business known as Emerging Communities Corporation. John is a lifelong resident of Kenosha. He and his wife, Linda, have two children, Melinda and Martin. Bob Johnson, originally from Illinois, is now a 22-year resident of Kenosha and Kenosha County. He is a District 16 alderman. He has 11 years of mid and executive level management for the business services industry. He earned a master's of business degree from Loyola University and a bachelor's degree from the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater in public policy and administration. Bob Johnson has served on numerous committees and boards, namely the Kenosha Literacy Council, the KUSD Anti-Bullying Committee, Generations Against Bullying, the City of Kenosha Finance Committee, and Vice Chairman of Kenosha's Redevelopment Authority. His role as a professor of business at one of Kenosha's local universities allows him the flexibility to coach for Christian Life School as the head football coach for the Pee Wee Eagles, a role he took on after coaching for many years for the Pee Wee Packers of the Boys and Girls Club. Father of three, he has a long-term girlfriend, Rachel. And now we're going to turn to the opening statements and begin with Mr. Antaramian.
Well, thank you very much. Good evening, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. And I thought for the opening statement, what I would start with is, what does it take to be a mayor? And I think the important attribute of being a mayor is leadership. It is something that I have had over 16 years of experience doing. And when we talk about leadership, leadership is about pulling people together, making decisions, and moving forward. So I'm looking forward to doing that. But along with that, leadership means having a vision. Where is Kenosha going to go? What are we going to do, and how are we going to get there? And that means being able to work with people, and not just council, but the public, in getting together and making things happen. And that's the third aspect of what I consider the leadership role, and that's listening. Too often, we don't listen to what people's concerns are. That is something that I think is very important and something I have done over the years. Whether it's been a major project at Chrysler or any of the other locations we have on brownfields, we have always listened to what the public has to say.
Thank you, Mr. Antaramian. And now we'll hear an opening statement from Mr. Johnson. And maybe my timer will continue to work. Okay. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Len. If I could just start by offering my condolences to the Wilk family. I recently learned, literally just a moment ago, that Judge Wilk has passed. He will be sorely missed, and I considered him a good friend and a strong legal advocate. So my condolences to he and his family. Thank you, Len, for arranging this. This does take a lot of work and effort, I know, and I appreciate the time and energy you put into organizing this. It's an important part of democracy for candidates to get together and allow people to hear what their vision is for our city. And in the absence of this type of discussion, it becomes more and more difficult to arrive at a reasonable or, I think, an educated decision. But the reason why I'm running for mayor is because, frankly, people want someone new. But being the new guy isn't enough. You have to have vision, and you have to have the credentials to do the job. Len shared very nicely what my credentials were. I do have a master's in business administration. I am a professor of business at one of our local universities, and I'm getting away from Len, so I'm assuming he's cutting me off.
Thank you for your first minute. I'm going to begin by asking about vision. There's been a lot of talk about what the vision of Kenosha should be for the future, where we ought to be going in the future. There have been studies, many studies, lots of discussions, lots of public meetings. Since Mr. Johnson went second with his intro, we're going to start and let him answer the first question. Define your vision for Kenosha as specifically as you can for me.
Thank you, sir. My vision for Kenosha is simple. My vision is what people have been telling me for the last 6 years are their primary concerns. I've been in city government since 2010, 2009, working first with the Redevelopment Authority for the city of Kenosha. And the three chief things I hear regularly, the themes I hear consistently are, number one, our taxes are too high, and we spend way too much money on things that we don't need. The second thing I hear most frequently is our roads are in horrible condition. They've been reduced to dirt in many cases. And that's because they've been neglected for 25 years. And lastly, I hear from people they don't feel safe in some parts of our older neighborhoods. I don't think it's okay when the elderly can't sit on their front porch in neighborhoods like Uptown and feel safe. I don't think it's okay when people, our children, can't grab a bucket of worms and throw a fishing pole over their shoulder and head down to Lincoln Lagoon or Anderson Pond without being harassed by gangbangers or drug dealers. My plan is to fix our debt, to fund our roads, and to focus on public safety.
Mr. Antaramian, what is your vision for the city of Kenosha that you referenced earlier? Can you be as specific as possible?
Sure. I think what we need to look at in Kenosha is what has to happen so that we can keep our young people here. We are losing our children and our grandchildren, and part of that is because we don't have the right mix of jobs and economic development. We need to start looking at how we're going to maintain and keep these young people here, and that starts with looking at jobs. So we need to look at manufacturing and bringing manufacturing back into the community. We need to build a new industrial park targeted at manufacturing. And dealing with that also then deals with an area of research and development. We need to start putting together prospects of research and development, incubators type of facilities, startup funding for new companies to come in. And those are the types of things we need to start looking at from the economic aspect. We also need to look at the neighborhoods. And for those of you who remember, over 16 years, I spent working on neighborhoods, and we did a lot of great things in the neighborhoods. We improved the neighborhoods. We improved the infrastructure. We reduced crime by over 29% during that period of time. We were able to get into the neighborhoods, put in the beat patrols, put in the bicycle patrols. We did the SROs in the school districts. We did all those things to help reduce crime. But on top of that, we worked with the young people. We created programs, and that's the thing we need to continue to do. We need to bring back the YAY program, the Youth Employment and the Arts program, programs that actually keep young people busy, keep them active so they don't get into trouble, and make it so that they have opportunities.
Thank you.
Mr. Johnson, would you like to reply? Yes, I would like to reply. Thank you. Mr. Antaramian's campaign is talking an awful lot about reducing crime over his tenure from 1992 to 2008, and he throws around a number. The number is 29%. But what he's doing is he's using false information. See, the reality is that after 2002, you can't compare information or crime data that was pulled before 2002 because there was a change in the way that we reported our crime data.
All right. Would you respond to that, Mr. Antaramian?
I think probably the best way, my data came from the chief of police. So I'm going off of the letter that I have from the chief of police comparing crime data. So to my knowledge, the data is correct, and it's the way it's supposed to be. And so I will again... You know, the chief is here, in fact, so afterwards
we'll
you can talk with them.
Perhaps we'll have to leave that to the Kenosha News to investigate.
I've got the data. You want to take a look at the data? Everybody in the room can see the data. Violent and property crimes grew by 34% your last 5 years in office. I think that's what we should be looking at, not over the span of 16 years, especially when the data can't be compared. Violent and property crimes grew 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, and 2007 by 34%.
We'll look forward to seeing all that data.
We can look through the data.
I have no problem with the data being looked at. More than glad.
Now, I'd like to move to another concern. There's been a lot of talk about how the city's information technology directorate is run, how our information technology office is run, how we contract for those services. Do you have any thoughts about how you would conduct your government to avoid these problems in the future? Mr. Antaramian.
Well, I think the issue comes down to is, again, management and how you put things together. As far as the computer and issues going with the data collection, data material, that is something that the city has hired a staff to do. I'm not looking to make any major modifications until we know what is going on with some issues that have been raised on that situation. And so it would be inappropriate to try to anticipate what you're going to do until you know all the facts on that.
Do you have a response, Mr.
Johnson? Yes, it would be inappropriate to wait to see what the data says if you didn't know how to implement technology in your business operations. As a professional with over 11 years of experience over the height of the economic crisis, we turned to technology. My generation grew up with technology. We know how to use technology. We don't need to wait for some report to tell us how to implement it. The city of Kenosha has been operating for far too long in the 80s, the 90s. We've got to implement. The calendar says it's 2016. It's time we move into the 21st century.
We have a question from an audience member that's quite interesting about the topic, and it's not a new topic probably. Why is it necessary for the city to hire outside consultants when we have talented people on our staff? Mr. Johnson?
I completely agree with that. We should not be hiring consultants when we have a staff of professionals. The city of Kenosha is $200 million in debt, and we didn't get to be $200 million in debt by making insignificant expenses. It's the cumulative effect. And if you take a look at all of the additions of consulting fees, like the ones that my opponent, John Antomiranian, collected, when I've been speaking about collecting $158,000, but we have no evidence of anything that he did. There's no documentation, only that he submitted 69 invoices. I don't think we should have those type of consulting
Didn't
fees.
You vote for that contract?
The contract that we voted for was in August of 2014. It was an extension of his original contracts, which started
did
in
Did you object at that time?
I was unaware that at the time he was...
I see.
I was unaware at the time that he was sitting on a committee that, in my opinion, violates 946.13 of state.
Well, according to the district attorney, who released a letter just today, the district attorney, Robert Zaff, basically, in layman's language, says that if you had read the statute, you would know that was a frivolous suit. Now, I'm balderizing it, but that's basically what the DA said.
Sure, Len. He didn't say that. What he said was it was his opinion that 946.13 doesn't apply to my opponent, but there's 100,000 people in the city, not a single person expected
I'm
Bob
sorry.
Zaff, excuse me,
You're right.
Not
Maybe.
One person expected Bob Zaff to make a decision that was going to incriminate a buddy who he campaigned with previously. Nobody is expecting Bob Zaff to do much of anything anymore. He's lost the
We're not going to impugn Bob Zaff here. Mr. Antaramian, would you reply?
You know,
excuse me.
We're not going to impugn Bob Zaff here. He's not here to defend himself. Mr. Antaramian, will you reply?
Excuse me, sir.
Mr. Antaramian.
You gave his name. You gave his name and you spoke on
but
his
he
behalf.
But he can't. You're criticizing him and he
I'm
can't defend himself.
I'm criticizing the words that you've said.
Mr. Antaramian.
You know, through this whole campaign, I have tried really hard not to go after anyone individually. And I have regrettably been subject to lies that my opponent has thrown out at my family and myself. And to be very honest with you, it's very tiresome, Bob. It would be nice to have a campaign where we actually talked issues, but you don't seem to be able to talk issues. You take statistics and you distort them. You take parts of truth and distort them. I have never seen, in 26 years of campaigning, an opponent who distorted and did not tell the truth as much as you do. And I wasn't even going to say that today, but after what you just did, I will. Shame on you. Shame on you for the whole concept of what you have done. You've made a mockery of the election. You've tried to make it so that other people look bad because you wish to look good. Your record is yours. Stick to your own record as to what it is. And if you want to talk about debts and everything else, I'm more than willing to do that. Because it's not debt. It was investment in our community. We created hundreds of millions of dollars worth of jobs, or hundreds of million dollars worth of tax base. Hundreds of thousands of, now you got me going, thousands of jobs for the community. Those are the things that we did. This community is better off today than it was in 92 when I took over. And we will continue to move forward. But your concept of destruction of individuals, your ability to not be honest is just downright frustrating. And to now attack the DA because you don't like a decision he made, shame on you.
Mr. Johnson, will the audience please refrain? Will the audience please refrain? Mr. Johnson.
I think an applause is appropriate because I think he should be awarded an Academy Award, although he just missed those from a couple days ago. The reality is that the data that I use is empirically correct. And I make no apologies for talking about his big spending appetite. The things that he did were not appropriate for the time, and I don't think that the city of Kenosha should be ashamed of the fact that I'm highlighting the fact or the things that he did when he served as mayor. Now, the reality is this. We want to talk about the district attorney disagreeing with my complaint and dismissing it. But if you had read what he had actually wrote in there, and he didn't boulderize it using your own language, what you would have found is that had you done any investigation on this, Mr. Aquinta, you would have found that there's a district attorney in Madison, Wisconsin, who provides a completely contrary decision. He says that people who sit on committees are actually subject to 946.13 and held by those requirements. I serve as a volunteer for the Redevelopment Authority for the City of Kenosha. If I serve on that commission as a volunteer unpaid, which it sounds like that's what Mr. Zaff was relying on, that somehow or another I'm immune to the requirements and regulations of 946.13. That is not the case. The difference between Bob Zapp's opinion and the opinion that I have in my possession from a
Have you published that opinion?
I have.
Can we see it?
Three different times. Kenosha News has it, but they haven't chosen to run with that story. Here's the other thing you need to know. The difference between that district attorney's opinion and the opinion of Bob Zaff is Bob Zaff doesn't consider John, or the district attorney out of Madison doesn't know John Antrimanian. He hasn't campaigned with him, and he's not his buddy.
Is it his jurisdiction?
This is what,
whose jurisdiction is it?
It's not a jurisdictional issue. It's an opinion. Certainly, he doesn't have jurisdiction. He can't come in. But the reality is I've been able to produce an opinion from somebody who's not a friend with the insiders, and that opinion supports my argument that 946.13 applies to people who sit on boards, people who sit on committees.
If John Antrimanian was any other— Who is the person in Madison that we're quoting here?
The district attorney. The district attorney.
Do you have his name?
I'm sure you could look it up. I submitted it to the Kenosha News. Okay. But the only difference is that this district attorney doesn't know John Antrimanian. Bob Zaff knows John Antrimanian, and people are sick of this type of thing, people protecting people. He broke the law, and I think he should be punished to the fullest extent allowable by law.
Have you ever signed a complaint, then, against him for that purpose?
Yes, he has. He has signed a complaint. And, in fact, Bob, you need to understand, because I am getting very tired of this, that your comments now, after you have been informed that this is not an issue, calling me, again, a criminal, opens you up after this election is over, and we will talk after this election is over.
I'm not going to allow you to intimidate me into silence because you have been ripping off the city of Kenosha taxpayers and the state of Wisconsin. I'm not going to allow it to happen.
You have been intimidating everybody and anybody who disagrees with you.
Well, let's move on to another question.
You've gone after the press, you've gone after us, you've gone after everyone. Enough, Bob.
This is what people like about me. They know that I'm not going to be backed up.
Well, let's go on to another question.
There's been a lot of criticism
of your background.
They know that I'm not going to be intimidated by anybody who is an insider or somebody who wants to protect sweetheart deals. I've made it very clear to all the insiders, I will not be licking the boots of any organization in this city for the first time in a long time. I'm going to be on the side of the city of Kenosha taxpayers, and they're going to have somebody on the ballot they can support.
Right. You're filibustering, Mr. Johnson. Now, what I'd like to know is what your response is to the complaints that people have made about your background. I know you want to answer those complaints, so I'd like to give you an opportunity to do so here.
What are the things that is out there? There's ammunition that my political adversaries want to use, and I've been the first person to admit my path to success hasn't been graceful. I don't hide from it. People love that. But people want to talk about what was going on when I was 17 years old, 18 years old, 27 years old, 26, whatever the number was. I'm happy to do that because in 1999, when I was 17 years old, after only 6 years in office, my opponent had already doubled the city's debt. That's what people want to talk about. In 1999. You want to talk about 2007? I'm happy to do it. Let's go to 2007. By 2007, he had already tripled the city's debt and doubled the city's property taxes. Those are the things that people are interested in. Now, the folks who have their, they picked their horse in this race, my political adversaries, this is ammunition they're going to be using. Smear campaigns happen all the time. If we were electing people based on smear campaigns, our government would have a very different look about it.
It is fascinating how someone who has, my father used to say, people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. Bob, you throw lots of stones, and you really shouldn't. And that's all I'm going to say about your background, because I don't care about your background, to tell you the truth. You're not that important. I will tell you, though, however, that this concept of I double taxes. I was mayor for 16 years. And in 16 years, if I had doubled taxes, how many people do you think would have been voting for me? Not very many, Bob. And I had elections. So that's first. But secondly, the state law limits what your expenditures can be. So our expenditures were right in the area of inflation or a little better. Now, we doubled the value. But that's not doubling property taxes, Bob. And you've talked about property taxes. So let's start with that. Then we'll go to debt. We definitely invested in this community, and I'm very proud of the things we did. I have no qualms of standing in front of anyone and saying, we did Harbor Park. We did a whole bunch of brownfields, and we had to put money in to make them happen. I'm proud to say that we built two brand new industrial parks. Again, I have no problem saying that. You want to blame me for that? Be my guest. Blame me.
I'd like to go into some of the campaign issues that have been brought up with respect to quality of life in the community.
The first question I'd like to ask is a couple of the comments that he made a moment ago.
Well, I'd like to change the topic if you don't mind.
Well, I think it's important you allow me to talk about. He challenged what I've been talking about.
Briefly,
when we talk about
please.
The property taxes went from $19 million to $38 million. Now, you don't have to be a scientist or a mathematician to understand that if you charge the city commercial tax.
I haven't looked at his numbers, so I don't know. But if it did, that's not the property tax bill. And that's what he's talking about, is the property tax bill. I know enough about how this functions, Bob. The property tax bill did not double. There is no one in this building who can go back to 1992 to 2008 and show a tax bill that's going to say it doubled. No one. You cannot say that.
You're interrupting. Stop it.
You know, it's interesting. Your whole concept of bullying, I hope everyone just has seen how this has worked. Because you are exactly that. Exactly what you say you're not.
All right, more ad hominem attacks, okay? I'm tired of the ad hominem attacks. We're going to move on. One of the issues is the quality of life in Kenosha, and policing has been raised in the campaign. I'd like to start by asking Mr. Andranian what he plans to do about policing in the future and ask Mr. Johnson about his plans.
Well, one of the things that we're looking at doing is getting back into the neighborhoods. And policing is not just law enforcement in the neighborhood. It's how you deal with the whole neighborhood. It's how we do projects within the neighborhood. So an example would be is that we definitely started beat patrols back when I was mayor. We got funding from federal grants, and we expanded the program, and we kept those going for many, many years. We put the bicycle patrols in. We also put in the liaison office in the schools. Those are the things that were implemented during my time, and those are the types of things that worked very, very well. So expansion of those types of programs, I think, are very positive. Working in the neighborhoods, and most people remember the old outposts. Putting the outposts in and having the police department tied with the outposts to some extent is a way of making sure that law enforcement's in the neighborhood and working with kids and also has the kids in the neighborhood. So those kind of programs, along with non-for-profits working together, with that and with inspection, because one of the things that has to happen is we need to get inspections back into the neighborhoods on a more aggressive level and home ownership back in the neighborhoods. It's a combination of things. Law enforcement by itself will not fix our neighborhoods. It has to be a combination of things that we do to fix our neighborhoods.
Mr. Johnson.
You just heard my opponent talk about what's important with respect to the quality of life in our city. He made no mention of the fact that we have a heroin epidemic. He made no mention of the fact that we have a growing gang population. He made no mention of the fact that violence and property crimes are on the rise. What he relies on is 16 years of looking in the rearview mirror, the old way of doing things. What we need to do, in my opinion, in moving forward, is we have to add 20 additional officers in the next 4 years and or repurpose. Now, I didn't just come up with these plans. I actually went out and I rode and I did a ride along on all three shifts with the Kenosha Police Department. I spoke with the employees and the officers. What do you need from us? What's going to help us take our crime prevention to the next level? What additional resources could we implement, so on and so forth? And when we implement the things that they say we need, the folks who are the boots on the ground, not the elected officials, not the politicians who are saying things to get them elected, we'll be able to move our crime prevention efforts to the next level. When we add people to our drug prevention unit, when we add people to our gang prevention unit, when we repurpose people who are out on the, I've said that I'd like to repurpose the officers Thursday, Friday, Saturday, who are spending their time doing the tavern patrols, I think we should turn our attention and get those folks working on drug prevention and gang prevention. We should have people out. We should have a team of people who are focusing on those who have violated parole. There, I think the number was 1,000 recently. If we would get those people, the people who have violated parole, those are the folks who are breaking the law. Those are the ones who are committing the violence and property crimes. We have to put additional resources in place. We have to do that through 20 additional officers. We also need to introduce 21st century technology. We have detectives who go to a crime scene and have to write on pen and paper. I don't understand why we haven't moved into the 21st century.
Mr. Andranian,
there's just a couple quick points here. One being that all the things he just said are things that we have in place. He's wanting to expand on. So I guess the old ways kind of work. The other part is you know what? Bob, you mentioned a number of things that you want to do. That's wonderful. You voted against the two new cops in the budget. You voted against vests for cops in the protection. You voted against the squad cars. You voted against the technology. You voted against all that.
Is that true?
No, what I voted against was I actually voted against both the capital improvement plan and I voted against the operating budget. And the reason why I voted against those two budgets was we had an opportunity to give $500,000 back to the city of Kenosha taxpayers. And instead of doing that, we spent it. I sent a message to the city of Kenosha taxpayers that I'm not going to be spending all the extra money as it comes through. Now, my opponent has a history of being a big spender by way of tripling the city's debt.
Wait. How are you going to pay for these policemen? I don't understand how we're going to pay for these policemen.
What do you mean you don't understand how we're
going to
pay for these
policemen?
Well,
you want to return money to the taxpayers instead of paying for the policemen? I'm confused.
So I'm guessing that you're being flippant in your question.
You're proud of denying this budget request that included more policemen. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
So how in the future would you pay for the 20 extra policemen? Where would that money come from?
It would come from a variety of sources.
So how much wiggle room is there in the budget to do that?
Well, it depends, Len. If we do all the things that I'm talking about, if we were to implement my vision for the city of Kenosha, there's a lot of moving parts. And to answer the question simply, if you look at my website at www.johnsonformayor.com, mm-hmm. I'm the only person who's published any plans. If you look at that, there's a pro forma that I've provided for the public to view. I'm the only person who's provided any dollars and cents figures.
So you have a draft budget online, is that?
Yes, and the actual pro forma shows that after full implementation 5 years from now, we'd be carrying an additional $2 million on our operating budget. Now, the thing that's important to know is that we don't implement or improve our public safety for just because that's what we want to do. It's part of a comprehensive plan. And when we start doing the other things, people want to come to our city. We start attracting businesses to our community. We broaden the tax base. We start improving or eliminating the violent and property crimes in our town. People start to invest in our older neighborhoods. And when they start to invest in our older neighborhoods, the property valuation gets spread out amongst more people. It's a simple equation.
Mr. Antaramian, where's the money going to come from for all the improvements?
You can't do what he wants to do.
Is there a lot of wiggle room in the city budget to do these things?
No, there is not a huge amount of wiggle room in the city budget. The lion's share of your city budget is protective services. It's our public service and protective services. That's the lion's share of your budget. You cannot just say, I'm going to add 20 police officers and think you're going to do it. You have fire, which is another issue that you may be asking about in the future. But there's a whole bunch of things that you still have to do. You cannot just say, I'm going to add 20 officers and do that within a short period of time. We added 29 officers over 16 years. It took a long time to build into the budget that number of officers. The state limits what you can expend. And if you exceed that expenditure, you lose funds from the state, which drives taxes up. You cannot do that. So, you know, I'm sure that Bob has said he's got all these wonderful plans. Nothing personal. I haven't seen a plan of his that actually tells you what you're going to cut, what you're going to end up doing, to have enough funds to do what you wish to do.
I'd like to get to a broader question now about city government that's been asked many times by many of our guests tonight and by people who have sent in over the email. And they've asked, how would you run your administration or your new administration in the case of Mr. Antaramian? In other words, what would be the relationship and the leadership you'd be looking for in the city administrator, for example, and your other department heads? What would be your style of administration to move this city forward so we can be successful in the future as we have been in the past? Mr. Johnson.
Well, I'd like to actually address a couple comments that he made just a moment ago because I think it's appropriate that I get a rebuttal. The idea that we can't spend $2 million over a five-year period of time, coming from somebody who's tripled the city's debt over a period of 16 years, is really shocking to me. You can't have both sides of the fence.
And I don't want both sides. I invested those funds, and those funds are in buildings such as the redevelopment of Harbor Park. It is in the TIF districts that are paying themselves off, whether you believe that or not. Those things are happening, and they are working. And, in fact, the TIF districts will pay themselves off in the next 8 to 10 years. So that is not even an issue. So when you talk about reducing debt, that debt's already in place, and it's coming down. So, again, if you'd like to get back, though, let's go back to the question. The question to you was, how are you going to deal with administration?
Thank you for allowing me to speak, Len. I appreciate you stopping him from interrupting me, just as you've done with me on him. But at the same time, You're not allowed to make up the numbers. The facts are the facts. You triple the city's debt. You double the city's property taxes.
Did not double the city's property taxes.
the question about how are we going to move the city forward is we're going to have to take a different approach on how we lead. We have to lead from the front. This idea that we throw tens of million dollars at everything isn't something that is going to make any sense for us. We already have a limit on the things that we can do because of the spending of my opponent. Mayor Bosman and Frank Pacetti have been playing behind the eight ball for the last 8 years, trying to dig out from the debt spending of my opponent. And we're not even talking about water utility debt either, by the way. We haven't added that to the equation at all, because I think that just overcomplicates it. But when we talk about what we're going to do, we have to actually turn our attention towards the residents of the city. Right now, the city is driven by ego and emotion. Rarely do you see the city being on being represented for what's in the best interest. Case in point, when the streetcar expansion came forward and there was a request to put it on a referendum, that did not make it to referendum because people weren't interested in hearing what the people of the city had to say on one of the most contentious issues that we've had. Under my leadership, we're actually going to listen to the residents of the city of Kenosha, and that's what people are excited about. They got somebody on the ballot who's going to listen to them, because I've demonstrated that over the last 2 years as alderman.
Mr. Antrenian, we'll look forward to hearing from you on your website about what your budget really was like and what that really happened and how that worked.
I'm going to do two things here, because I'll be very quick on the first part. You asked how we're going to do administration. Right now, we have a lot of department heads in the city. We pay them well. It's their job to follow what needs to get done. We're there to give direction and make sure that the departments do their jobs. That's what we do. We're not there to micromanage the department. The department needs to do their work and do their jobs. The administration is there to provide support when necessary, to intervene when there are issues and problems. And that's how I've always managed, and that's how I'm going to continue to manage. But I am going to go off base here, because I think it's only fair. My opponent keeps on talking about the cities behind the eight ball because of the amount of debt that I created. The majority of debt that I created is gone. It's been paid off. It's not there. There are two types of debt.
Not true.
Oh, excuse me. Now it's my turn to talk. There's two types of debt. There is the capital improvements debt, which is a note, which is a 10-year note. Every year, $10 million drops off. So the debt that I created early on by fixing roads, by $4.5 million a year into road work, that debt falls off every year. So I've been gone 8 years. So $80 million of that debt is already gone. That's not – so the debt that's there now is not debt that my administration created. It is debt that was incurred and debt that Bob actually helped create in the last 2 years, because he's voted for about $30 million in debt. And, yes, I looked it up. Thank you, Bob, just in case you want to say no. The other piece of the issue comes down to the streetcar. I take credit for and the things that I have done over the years, and the streetcar was something I did bring in. However, Bob, I'm not the one who voted to expand the streetcar. You did. And, again, if anyone wants to, they can go on the Internet tonight, because we put the tape on of you on council floor saying you voted for this, you're supporting the streetcar expansion. You can't have it both ways. You cannot continue to do that. Either you're going to stick to what you did or not. You cannot play both games.
What should happen with that streetcar grant? What's the status of that now, Mr. Johnson?
To the false claim just a moment ago,
where should it go?
This idea that I voted to expand the streetcar. What my opponent fails to inform the audience of is that the streetcar expansion was voted on in 2013. I was elected into office in 2014. When it came before the council, what we did was we actually voted to pick the route. And I think that the reference he makes about the video, the audio that he's, I understand, shared to the for the Internet to see, is interesting, because if you look at the very beginning of that video, I say, I am not a supporter of streetcar expansion. And I've gone through and I've met with people, and I see that there's a lot of emotional capital involved in this. And I was operating under the impression that, like everybody else in the city, that we had $8 million in the bank, that the feds had given us $8 million. It was just sitting there accruing interest, and we were going to use it or lose it. I learned that that wasn't the case, that it was not sitting in the bank. It was a reimbursement. So when I was sitting and trying to arrive at a place where I could get behind this project, because as much as I don't support the fact that my opponent built the second, the third, and the fourth museum, and that he put in a streetcar, and he did a lot of other bad things for the city, I, at this point, am going to fix those problems. So I came from a position of saying, okay, the streetcar was a bad decision. How do we fix it? And when I thought we had $8 million in the bank and we only had to bring in $2 million to match that equation or match the funds, I thought that was a 4-to-1 return. And I, as a private investor, would make that decision every single time. Now, at a $500,000 operating expense, that means we had 16 years to make the streetcar work. When my opponent left office, it was failing. And even though it was failing, he wanted to expand it. So he's just actually trying to confuse people into thinking that I supported streetcar expansion.
Let's get back to the question of what do we do now in the future with the streetcar and what should we do in terms of public transportation. The public wants to know what either of you fellows will do about public transportation in this community. It's a big problem. So let's go to that, please. Let's talk about public transportation and not any more of these ad hominem attacks, he said, she said.
I'll be more than glad to. One of the things that happened is after the streetcar determination was, the $8 million was sitting there, I approached the city and I approached the mayor on the ability of repurposing those funds. I then worked with them, the mayor, to make a request to the state and federal government to repurpose the funds. And you've seen it in the article in the paper, of which case we then were able to get the first hurdle passed, actually the first two hurdles passed, of being able to reallocate those funds. Those funds then are reallocated in this way. The city will be able to use those funds to put in a second and third shift bus route type of system out to all the industrial parks outside the city and inside the city. So that, and we're working with, the goal will be to work with the companies to find out where the neighborhoods are so we can put in second and third shifts so we can actually get people to work and home again.
Okay, Mr. Johnson, what would be your plan for public transportation?
Number one, everything he just said is not true. They are not going to repurpose those dollars. We know that from historical experience. What he was able to get and provide and was able to confuse the Kenosha News into writing about was that they basically approved the process. They rewritten the process and said, yes, you can apply to try and repurpose these dollars. But ultimately, the CMAQ selection committee is going to decide if you can use these dollars for something else. We tried moving a walking sidewalk out at Nash Park, and they said that that wasn't going to be approved. What he's trying to do now is build a new transportation route when, first off, we haven't even looked to see what the efficiencies are. Do we need to expand that bus route or expand transportation? Because I shared with you, for the last 6 years, while I've been serving the community and you've been ripping the city off, I've been serving the community. They've told me they want three things. They want a reduction in taxes, they want the roads fixed, and they want to focus on public safety. I'm not hearing anything about public transportation, but this is a good indication what he's going to do should he prevail. He wants to buy things that we don't need. We didn't need a second museum, a third museum, or a fourth museum, but he bought that, didn't he? Now he wants to buy additional buses. Why aren't we asking the folks who are out at the business parks to pay for the transportation? Why are we asking the city of Kenosha taxpayers to pay for all of these things? If the businesses need our people to work, the city of Kenosha residents to work, then they ought to pay wages where they can buy cars.
I think Bob just hit the nail on the head as far as the difference between the two of us. He does not believe that people are important. He does not believe that culture is important. He does not believe that anything that is good and quality for the city that enables people to do things and enjoy their community is important. The only thing that's important is that he become mayor, and it's very discouraging.
I'd like to pursue a little bit more about the public good. We've had questions from the public about insufficient public transportation, and we've had questions about the quality of life. In other words, public art, quality of life, parks, those sorts of improvements, and youth sports. Mr. Antaramian, where do you see those cultural and aesthetic activities and issues coming into play in the future for a city like Kenosha?
Well, I think that it's very important for us to get youth active in different types of activities. And a lot of the work we need to do is with the non-for-profits. The non-for-profits are able to leverage a lot of dollars that we can work with them through either CDBG or other types of programs to enable them to do activities. And I'll use the example, I'll go back to one of my favorites, and it always has been, is the Youth Employment in the Arts Program. Now that's not sports, but it's art, and it creates a situation where young people went to school during the summer. After school, the city hired them to do work, artwork. And that artwork was all over, public art throughout the city. And that was done through a private-public partnership. Private-public partnerships work, and I've had a long history of doing that throughout the time that I was mayor, and it would be the way that I would look at trying to pull these things together. all the festivals that we now do, a lot of those were started back in my administration. The market, the situation with the rendezvous, the peanut butter and jam concerts, those are all things that we believe that we started and worked with the private sector and eventually spun it off to the private sector. And that's how I would look to continue doing those type of activities.
Mr. Johnson?
Well, what my opponent just spoke about were things that already exist. So I guess we could go down a list of activities published in the Kenosha News. We'd be able to repeat his answer without asking the question. But I come from a position of not talking about what we should be doing. I come from a position of actually volunteering as a person who's involved with those things. As you learned in the bio, I am a coach for Christian Life School, a youth football coach. I am a coach for the Boys and Girls Club, and I think the Boys and Girls Club does a great job. But what we have are a collection of people all trying to do the same thing. Under my leadership, what we'll do is we'll get everybody sitting down at the same table, talk about the resources that we're deploying for those particular youth activities and the such, and make sure that we're all taking advantage of and getting economies of scale. If we're all pulling in the same side of the rope in the same direction for a change, I think we'll pull a lot further.
We've had a question submitted that sort of follows up on the question I just asked about youth sports and culture, and that is, what about the senior citizens? What attention would you give to the senior citizens? Mr. Johnson?
Well, I think the number one thing that we can do for the senior citizens, based on the things I'm hearing from them, is make sure that they feel safe. Like I said, I've heard from a number of people. For example, the folks who are sitting on the front porch in our older neighborhoods, like Uptown, they don't feel safe. I think the most important thing we can do is create safety for communities. No matter what community you live in, I think you deserve to be able to feel safe, especially the elderly. That's important to them. And under my leadership, under my crime prevention plan, we'll move in that direction.
Thank you. I'm going to turn to ask the candidates to give approximately a one-minute closing statement, and I will keep time and give them a five-second warning when they reach that time. We started with Mr. Johnson at the beginning, so we're going to start with Mr. Andreini at the beginning. Thank you for keeping me honest. So we're going to start with Mr. Johnson now. Mr. Johnson, your closing statement, please.
Thank you, sir. And again, I just want to echo my comments from the beginning. I appreciate you taking time out of your day to host this discussion. Kenosha's at a turning point, and who we choose to hire as our next mayor is going to determine whether or not we move forward or if we go backwards. And in my opinion, a vote for my opponent is a step backwards. Kenosha's ready for somebody new. And I ask people who are supporting him to answer a couple basic questions. If you had known he was going to triple the city's debt or double the city's property taxes, would you have voted for him? If you had known he was going to put in the second, the third, and the fourth museum, would you have voted for him? If you had known he was going to put in the streetcar and then watch it fail and suggest that we expand it, would you have voted for him? Those are all things that I think people should be asking themselves. The projects have failed or underperformed, and under my using my professional educational background, I'm going to make sure that we turn these assets that are underperforming or financially failing and make sure that they are performing. If people agree that it's time to fix our debt, to fund our streets, and to focus on public safety, I'm asking you to join me, and I'm asking you to vote for somebody new. Vote for Bob Johnson on April 5th, and bring 10 of your friends with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Antaramian?
Well, thank you very much. I must confess, I was hoping for a different type of debate, and it didn't occur. I really was hoping we would actually talk about issues in the sense of getting into a couple issues that we really need to do. So I'm going to just take my couple minutes here and talk to you about why I ran for office, why I'm running for mayor. And I'm running for mayor because of our children and grandchildren. We're losing them. They're not staying here. They're going other places. They're going other places because we don't have the right mix of jobs. We don't have the right mix of cultural activities. We don't have those type of things that we need to keep them here. We need to focus on manufacturing. We need to focus on research and development, which I think is a tremendous opportunity for our community. And we need to pull those types of things together. We need to create the cultural atmosphere so that the community moves forward and grows. And we're not going to do that by just saying, oh, geez, we're going to cut this or cut that. I am proud of what I have done over my 16 years. I have no qualms at all. My opponent doesn't like what I did. Okay. But what we did was we turned the city around. We took a community that was in deep trouble, and we made it better. and I am very proud of what I have done and look forward to hopefully serving you again in the future.
Thank you very much, candidates for mayor. We appreciate your presence very much and that of the audience. This is Len Iaquinta.
You're listening to WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.